details of my last campaign to the stars. They'd given up on asking about that kind of thing after hearing about how I'd watched giant lizards run around with my guts in their bloody muzzles on Steelworld, and other similar tales. They'd learned to leave well enough alone. So instead of asking me about Machine World, they kept the tram's cabin full of easy talk, and I liked it that way. Our whole coming-home reintegration had become routine now, and all three of us seemed to be comfortable with that. After dinner, I was ready for bed. We climbed out of the tram, said our goodnights, and separated. My parents walked into the main house, while I made my way in the darkness to my private residence among the trees. Falling asleep alone on my couch felt like I'd rediscovered heaven. Anne had been an excellent house guest, but I was more than ready for a little R&R after her visit. When I had a woman staying in my place, I tended not to sleep the night through, if you know what I mean. Before retiring, I decided to have a few drinks. After much experimentation, I discovered the perfect dosage of alcohol to sleep well and yet awaken refreshed. Promptly after consuming the last shot glass, I stretched out with a smile on my face. A few weeks lazed by after that, during which I reacquainted myself with all my old pastimes. I rode over the Satilla River on my homemade floater, visited the Chapter House bar for cheap beer, and shot a lot of pool there. Since they'd begun to serve alcohol, the Chapter House had been transformed for the local legionaries. It was no longer just a trap for wide-eyed legion recruits from the sector. It had become a hangout for men and women like me, people whose eyes were already haunted by the light of the stars. It was about a month into my leave time when I made a mistake. I was in my parents' house, not my back shed where I usually hid during the daylight hours. While visiting with my mom, I was caught messing with my tapper instead of listening to her. Fooling with a tapper while pretending to have a conversation with your parents was a common enough thing to do, of course. What older person could hold the full attention of someone half their age? Imagine the temptation. The entirety of the galaxy's entertainment was accessible from a tiny screen embedded into the flesh of my arm. In comparison, my mom was prattling about trimming the brush from the driveway, obviously hinting that I should volunteer for the job. "Sure, Mom, I'll do it," I said without looking up. "Don't even worry about it."
"What's on your screen?"
she asked, craning her neck as she passed by me, heading for the kitchen.
"Who is that child?"
I froze for a split second, then lowered my arm and tapped the X that closed the window. "No one."
"A child in your photo box? That's not like the James McGill I know. She's a girl, isn't she?"
I think so, yes. How can you tell if a baby is a boy or a girl?"
"I've seen a few of them before," she said with a hint of sarcasm.
That sort of thing never ceases to amaze me. Women have an undefinable edge in that department. Take fashion choices, for example.
"Who is she?"
my mom interrupted. It was at about this moment that I realized she'd stopped walking toward the kitchen. She was looming over me and frowning. My dodge, attempting to switch the topic to feminine traits in general, was gaining no traction at all. I felt the tickle of sweat all over my body. The girl she'd spotted was none other than Etta, my daughter with Della. The fact that I'd neglected to bring up the existence of my child to my parents had bothered me from time to time, but I'd thought it was for the best. Up until now. Why had I been fooling with the photo album on my tapper at that moment, right in front of the most dangerous person on earth as far as my privacy was concerned? I don't quite know how to answer that. I wasn't sure why I'd held back the information in the first place, except that I knew my parents would be uncomfortably crawling all over me for details I didn't have about my daughter. From somewhere deep in my chest, a sigh erupted. It was long and protracted. I didn't look at my mom. I didn't say anything at all. I didn't want to lie to her, but I didn't want to start the conversation that was about to begin either. My mom studied me with that curious frown for about 2 more seconds, then walked into the kitchen.
"I'll be right back."
My relief was short-lived. She returned with tweezers. I twisted my mouth into an irritated expression when I saw them.
"Hold out your arm,"
she said. "I'm not 7 anymore, Mom," I complained. "I could pluck the hairs out of my screen myself."
"Apparently you can't,"
she said, taking my wrist. I let her stretch out my arm, and she proceeded to remove about 10 curly blonde hairs that had grown on the inside of my forearm, getting in the way of the screen which wrapped around the inside of my left wrist. Seemingly by accident, she opened my photo album again. Etta's face was there, looking up at both of us, with that clueless look all babies wear most of the time.
"Look at that. She's a cute thing," she said.
I sighed again. "Yes, she is."
"A little young for you, isn't she?"
"She's not my girlfriend, Mom."
"So then, who is she?"
"She's... her name is Etta." My mom set down the tweezers, and then she sat herself down on the couch opposite me. She stared at me with hungry eyes. I knew she was on to me. It was confession time. "I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't quite know how to tell you."
"Tell me what?"
she asked in a tiny voice. "Etta is my daughter. She's your granddaughter, Mama." You could have heard the grass grow for about 5 seconds. My mom had this weird look on her face like she was going to cry, pass out, or both. Instead, she leapt up, ran over, and hugged me. Then she let go of me and slapped me a good one.
"You little bastard,"
she said, almost whispering.
"Why didn't you tell me?"
I didn't know how. She grabbed my wrist and began working the touchscreen on my arm like a pro. Navigating the tapper's menus, she soon found a movie featuring Etta and watched it with tears running down her face.
"She's got to be almost 2. She's walking a few steps at a time. 2 years, James? You kept my only grandbaby from me for 2 years?"
"Oh, no, hold on," I said. "It wasn't like that. I didn't know about her myself until a couple of months ago." Then I told her the story, all about the crazy colonist girl named Della who'd killed me a couple of times before getting purposefully pregnant. I left out the part about her killing me, of course, but the story still didn't sound entirely wholesome to my mother.
"You barely know this girl? And wait a moment. Are you saying this child isn't even on Earth?"
"Yeah," I said. "That's what I'm saying, Mom. She's on Dust World, you know, Gamma Pavonis. I've never even met her. Della gave me a few pictures, but that's all."
"Are you sure the child is even yours? I mean, she looks like you, but this Della person, she doesn't sound like a reliable source of information."
"You mean she probably sleeps with plenty of guys, right? Well, according to her, she doesn't. But as to the parentage, I'm sure about that. Della's father is a kind of, doctor. He did the DNA test."
"They have your DNA?"
"Yes. The truth was they had plenty of my DNA back on Dust World, more than I did in my own body, in fact. They dissected a couple of my corpses and knew me better than I knew myself. They had enough damn DNA to build a whole new James McGill if they'd wanted to." My mom was crying again. I tried to comfort her, and I transferred all the pictures and movies I had to her tapper. I don't think this helped much. She looked at them, but she still wasn't happy. When she'd settled down, we had lunch, then I went back to my shack. I walked back home like a hound dog who has just experienced a good, solid kick in the hindquarters. As far as I could tell, I'd done the worst job possible of breaking the news to her, and she'd reacted in the worst possible way. James McGill had struck again. That evening, my dad tapped on my door. I let him in and faked a smile. He managed a flickering one of his own. "What's up, Dad?" He stared at me for a few seconds. "You have any of that rot-gut beer left?"
"Sure do."
I put a cold one into his hands and popped one open for myself. He took a slug before talking. "Your mother's freaking out."
"Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
I didn't mean to break it to her that way. It's not about what you told her. It's about the news itself.
She's always hinting about wanting to be a grandma, I said. I thought she might be happy after she got over the surprise.
Really, James? He asked. Our first grandchild is on another planet and you thought she'd be happy. We're not getting any younger, you know. You might not have noticed, but we're aging. You're not, but we are. We don't have forever to wait.
Thinking about that, I frowned. It was true.
A mercenary in the legions, a man who stuck with it, could live a century or more without aging. Centurion Graves, for example, was somewhere around 70 to 100 years old, but he looked like he was around 35, tops. That sounded great when you were a kid, and it was. But your family, the people who weren't in the legions, they kept on aging. On every campaign, I flew out to the stars and usually died out there in some fashion. Using the alien revival systems, the Legion rebuilt a new body and mind for me from stored data. Since they didn't bother to do body backups often, I usually came back physically younger than the age I'd been when I'd left Earth. But back home, everyone plodded along with a normal, quiet life. My parents had been aging all this time. I'd seen it, but I hadn't really thought about it until now.
Mom wants to see the baby, is that what you're saying? I asked.
Of course she does, he snapped. How can you be so smart and so dumb at the same time?
He was angry and with good reason, so I didn't object. Besides, it was a question I'd often asked myself. Instead of responding, I took a big hit of my beer and got up to get a fresh one. I offered him another one as well, and he took it.
She's already pricing out fare to Dust World, he said a few minutes after we'd each consumed another brew in silence.
What? You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. It's going to cost me a year's pay.
Alarmed, my mind was racing along new paths. Della had told me she was married. Not only that, when I'd last visited Dust World, there wasn't really any place for tourists to stay.
Dad, you should probably try to stop her.
I don't know if I can do that.
But Dad, Dust World, it's not like Earth. Most of the planet is a deadly wilderness. The people there, well, they don't think like we do.
Obviously not. Couldn't you have used some kind of protection, boy?
Sorry, Dad, she took me by surprise.
He snorted in amusement and shook his head. He usually didn't drink much, and he was on his third beer already. I put another one in front of him on my floating coffee table. After a moment of thought, he cracked it open.
You know what your mom's talking about? Dad asked me. Already?
What?
Moving out there. Emigrating. Hegemony has a new government policy, you know. If you buy a one-way ticket out there and promise to colonize, you can go for half price. That's a quarter the price of a round trip. We might be able to afford that if we sell this place.
My eyes widened another notch.
But...
That's right, he said. I'd be going with her. Now you know why I'm drinking every beer you put in front of me.
I was beginning to understand. My mom was a hard one to dissuade once she got an idea stuck in her head. I was the same way, but this was crazy.
You can't move to Dust World, I said. That's nuts. The place is like a giant Death Valley, even worse than that.
I know, but most of the colonists are settling on the other planet in the system, the Ocean World.
My eyes widened.
That's where the squids were wiped out. That's an even worse idea. The squids still think they own that planet. They might show up any day and eradicate whatever humans they find squatting there.
My dad shrugged. They might do that here on Earth, too. In fact, most people think it's only a matter of time. If the Empire doesn't send the battle fleet back to Frontier 921, we're all toast someday soon. Maybe your mother is right. Why not see the child before that happens?
We're building our own ships, I said in a confident, boastful tone. We're building up Earth's home fleet every day, and our ships can take theirs 2-1. I've seen them do battle.
Imperial warships can, not Earth ships, my dad said. People keep making that mistake. Galactic ships from the core systems are built by aliens who know what the hell they're doing. An Empire-built ship can take down cephalopod ships easily. Every news vid shows that. But our homegrown designs are totally different. Have you seen them? Big balls of puffcrete laid over wire ribs. Our ships look like crap, and they're untested. Some experts say they'll pop like balloons in battle. My dad was right, of course. Hegemony was building ships as fast as they could, but our initial designs resembled lopsided dog turds floating in space. The ships were constructed more like barrels with guns sticking out than anything else. The hulls were formed with puffcrete layered over a titanium gridwork to give it shape and something to stick to. The process reminded me of the way people built in-ground pools, concrete with rebar buried inside like metal bones. The new Earth ships were slow, heavy, and ugly. Could they fight? That was conjecture. With remarkable speed, my dad and I finished the entire 12-pack I'd been saving in my fridge for the weekend. After that, we were both in a markedly better mood. Cracking jokes, we walked back to the house together where we found my mom watching another video of Etta. She'd managed to find a clip of the baby taking her first steps. We sobered up immediately. My dad and I exchanged glances. "I'll talk to Della about this if she's still on Earth," I told him.
"If she's on Earth, wouldn't Etta be here too?"
"No, Dust World is a different. They raise their kids as a group. Della joined the Legion, but she didn't bring Etta with her." My dad shook his head.
"They sound like they don't think the way we do."
"True enough," I said. "But listen, if it's possible to go out there, I'll help with the return fare. You guys wouldn't make it as colonists on such a harsh planet." My dad gave me a hug, and I stared over his shoulder at the big screen in the living room. Etta had sandals on, but her feet were still black with grit. None of the colonist adults around her seemed to care or even to notice that she was dirty. I stepped back outside. Standing in the dark with gnats and mosquitoes buzzing near, I tapped a fateful message to Della. I didn't know if she was on Earth or not, but as soon as I hit send and the little twirling icon began to rotate, I felt my heart speed up a notch. The note I sent said simply, "Della, we need to talk." The wait was longer than usual. I'd begun to think she'd left Earth and gone back to Dust World after all. Hell, she might have ditched life and the Legions entirely and gone home, calling the whole thing a bad dream. But she hadn't. My tapper screen stopped twirling, and a tiny chime sounded in the dark. She'd gotten my message.
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Death World, Book 5 in the Undying Mercenary series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.